Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Phil Dierking, and Jill Robbins. Later, Marcia James will have this week's People in America report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
World leaders congratulated Donald Trump on his presidential election victory over Hillary Clinton. Many also have voiced a willingness to meet with the president-elect to begin talks on beginning a new phase in relations with the U.S. Japan's chief cabinet secretary, Yoshihide Suga, said Thursday that Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will meet with Trump next week in New York City. It will be Trump's first meeting with a foreign leader since he won Tuesday's presidential election. Suga said the two spoke by telephone following Trump's victory. Both agreed to support continued U.S.-Japan cooperation on Asia-Pacific security, he added. Trump often said during his campaign that Japan and other U.S. allies should be required to pay more of the costs to keep U.S. forces in their countries. The candidate also suggested U.S. forces might withdraw from nations that do not support more of those costs. Chinese President Xi Jinping sent a congratulatory message to Trump on Wednesday, state television reported. Trump criticized China's trade policies during the campaign. He said he supported placing import taxes, or tariffs, on Chinese goods coming into the U.S. The report said Xi told the president-elect that the two biggest economies in the world share a responsibility to support global development and prosperity. I place great importance on the China-U.S. relationship and look forward to working with you to uphold the principles of non-conflict, non-confrontation, mutual respect, and win-win cooperation, Xi was quoted as saying. The office of South Korean President Park Geun-hye said she spoke with Trump by telephone on Thursday. It said the president-elect promised he would make sure the U.S. will stand with South Korea 100%. In a statement, Park's office said the two agreed to continue U.S.-South Korean efforts to counter North Korea's military threats. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said he briefly spoke with Trump to discuss the history of military cooperation between the two countries. Turnbull also said he spoke about why Australia supports U.S. approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Trump has criticized trade deals, including the TPP. He has called it a disaster that would kill many American jobs. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto said he agreed to meet with Trump soon to discuss cooperation on a number of issues. Nieto said he welcomed Trump's victory speech, promising to seek common ground and partnerships with other countries. Dialogue to make agreements is still the best for Mexico, and my government will seek opportunities that benefit both nations in this new phase of bilateral relations, Nieto said. However, Mexican Foreign Minister Claudia Ruiz Massieu repeated her government's position about Trump's proposal to build a wall to keep illegal immigrants out of the U.S. She said her government did not want to pay the cost of the wall. Paying for a wall is not part of our vision, she told a local television station. Trump made his promise to make Mexico pay for the wall a major part of his campaign. Russian President Vladimir Putin sent a telegram to Trump after his victory on Wednesday. The Russian leader said he looked forward to a constructive dialogue based on the principles of equality and mutual respect. Putin also promised to work with Trump to help solve the current crisis in Russia-U.S. relations. During the presidential campaign, U.S. officials repeatedly accused the Russian government of being involved in attacks on American computer systems. They also warned that Russia may launch cyber attacks meant to disrupt the U.S. election. Russia denied the accusations, with one official saying the idea was an attempt by U.S. officials to create anti-Russian hysteria. Israel's leader, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, reacted by calling Trump a true friend of the State of Israel. In a video message, he said he believes the two leaders will continue to strengthen the unique alliance between our two countries and bring it to ever greater heights. In a joint letter, the leaders of the European Commission and EU Council congratulated Trump on his win and invited him to come to Brussels for talks. Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker and Council leader Donald Tusk noted it was more important than ever to strengthen transatlantic relations. They pledged to cooperate with the Trump administration on issues including climate change, migration, counterterrorism, and the threat to Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. I'm Brian Lynn.
History was made this week when a 34-year-old former refugee was elected to the Minnesota State Legislature. The woman, Ilhan Omar, will become the country's first Somali-American lawmaker. Omar was the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party candidate for the legislature in Minnesota's 60th district. She easily defeated her Republican opponent on Tuesday. Omar told supporters Tuesday night that her victory means a lot. My success is not only for me, but for every Somali, Muslim, and minority, particularly the young girls in the Dadaab refugee camp where I lived before coming to the U.S., she said. As a girl, Omar fled her home in Somalia because of the country's civil war. She spent 4 years at the Dadaab camp in Kenya before moving to the United States with her family. Omar began her career as a community activist. She is currently director of policy at the Women Organizing Women Network. The group works with immigrant women, helping them become engaged citizens and community leaders. Minnesota is home to the largest population of Somali refugees and immigrants in the United States. Many Somalis who spoke to VOA before the election said they were supporting Hillary Clinton for president because they felt that Donald Trump was anti-Somali. Earlier, Trump has said there are problems in Minnesota caused by poor vetting of refugees. He said there were large numbers of Somali refugees entering the state, and that this was unknown to state officials. He also said that some of the refugees had joined the Islamic State group. He accused them of spreading their extremist ideas all over our country and all over the world. Ahmed Hirsi, Omar's husband, told VOA that the campaign was a long struggle for his family to witness this day. I'm Phil Dierking.
Last Friday, French police began tearing down a huge camp in northeastern Paris. The camp was home for thousands of Afghans and Africans. Their removal to shelters is part of a government effort to stop migrants from living on the streets. The migrant camp was sometimes called Stalingrad because it was near the French capital's Stalingrad metro station. Aid groups said at least 3,000 people occupied the camp. However, broadcaster CNN said the number was closer to 4,000. Most migrants leave their home countries in search of work or a better life. But many of the people who lived in Stalingrad are considered refugees. They were forced to leave their home country because of war or oppression. Some migrants held their possessions while waiting for buses to take them to holding centers around Île-de-France, a French province that includes Paris. Didier Lechy is the director of the French Immigration and Integration Office. He promised his agency's teams would be present at the holding centers. He also said language aids would be available. The migrants will be able to stay in Île-de-France temporarily. Then they will be sent to reception centers all over France. At the centers, they will be told how to make an official request for asylum. The police operation to clear Stalingrad came a week after French President François Hollande ordered the destruction of another camp near the port of Calais. That camp was known as the Jungle. Hundreds of migrants fled to Stalingrad after the Jungle's demolition. Calais is near the English Channel. Thousands of migrants used the camp as a temporary stop on their way to Britain. Many risked their lives by traveling through the Channel Tunnel, an underwater transportation link connecting France to Britain. President Hollande said 5,000 migrants had been evacuated from the Calais camp in the past week, and sent to 450 centers around France. Hollande also said he spoke with British Prime Minister Theresa May to ensure that British officials would play their part in welcoming the new arrivals. After the demolition of the jungle, France began busing an estimated 1,500 unaccompanied young people to other parts of France. Most of them were from South Sudan and Afghanistan. The youngsters will be taken to temporary shelters around the country, while British and French officials consider their individual cases. People who live in the temporary camps have made long and dangerous trips, often by boat, to Europe from Sudan, Afghanistan, Syria, or other countries. The terrible conditions in France's migrant camps have become a sign of Europe's worst refugee crisis since World War II. France's interior minister told the Reuters news agency that 85% of the Calais migrants are expected to meet the government's requirements for asylum. Migrants in the jungle faced severe security and health problems, such as scabies and tuberculosis, according to a study in 2015. A water source was also polluted with deadly bacteria. Lee Daines, director of charity group Doctors of the World, told the Guardian newspaper that Calais was a humanitarian emergency. The residents were already hungry, he said, but their suffering was made worse because of their unsafe and difficult trips to reach France. Hollande said his country should not accept the camps because they are not worthy of France. They are not a long-term answer for migrants and refugees, he said. Throughout France, people have shown mixed feelings toward the Calais migrants. Some towns have been filled with protesters for and against migrants. Some local leaders launched a campaign against taking them in. But some towns around France are happy to receive the migrants from Calais. For example, people in Reims offered hot coffee and treats to 29 Afghans and Sudanese as they arrived in October. Residents have been calling aid groups to donate clothes for the migrants and volunteer their services. Philippe Wattier is the director of the Salvation Army office in Reims. He said that a number of migrants have a poor image of France because many people, including police, have mistreated them. Sometimes there are threats of violence against migrants. A letter to the Salvation Army last week threatened to burn down the buildings where migrants are staying. Wattier said the hostility in the letter is similar to feelings in other parts of Europe and the United States. I'm Jill Robbins.
On November 11th, Americans observe Veterans Day. Veterans Day honors men and women who serve or have served in the United States military. But who serves them? Melissa Fitzgerald, for one. The former Hollywood actress is senior director of the nonprofit organization Justice for Vets. The organization is a part of the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, NADCP. She says what inspires her to serve is a quote by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
There's a quote that has inspired me for many years, and my old friends will know, is the Martin Luther King Jr. quote, which is, "Everybody can be great because everybody can serve."
Justice for Vets helps to grow the number of veteran treatment courts and to expand their role. These courts were created to meet the specific needs of veterans involved in the criminal justice system. Many veterans return from combat with mental health problems related to their service. Some suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Some abuse drugs. These difficulties can lead to unemployment, homelessness, and arrest. The Veterans Treatment Courts help soldiers find solutions to break the cycle of drug abuse and crime. Melissa Fitzgerald knows that every veteran's journey back into civilian life after active duty military life is not the same.
The vast majority of our veterans are returning home as leaders in our communities. They are living incredibly productive lives, and they are truly civic assets. Some of our veterans are struggling. And when they come home and they are struggling and they get in trouble with the law because of a substance use disorder, mental health condition, or trauma, and our mission at Justice for Vets is to put a veterans treatment court within reach of every veteran in need, so they can receive treatment instead of incarceration.
Fitzgerald has visited many veterans in courts across the country. She says the programs are very rigorous and are part of the court system.
You know, it's an interdisciplinary court team that includes a judge, prosecutor, defense, probation, mental health care providers, among others, that they work together as a team, and they are specially trained by us because we do training and technical assistance, and to assess and treat the veterans who appear before them. The first veterans treatment court that I went to visit, it was a miracle to me. It was miraculous to see a judge speaking with the veteran who's appearing before him and thanking him for his service and saying, "We are here to make sure that you succeed, and we are all grateful for your service to this country." And seeing, you know, certainly I've seen many veterans stand a little taller.
Not only are the veterans treatment courts effective, Melissa says, they are also places of hope and healing.
And it is amazing to support the work that's going on there because it's remarkable. And on top of that, veterans treatment courts are effective, and they are returning healthy veterans to our communities. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've really struck me when I have visited the courts around the country is that all of our veterans, including the ones who are struggling, are of our nation's greatest and most valuable civic assets.
Sergeant Tommy Reeman is one of those assets.
He served in Iraq. He was shot several times, 11 shrapnel wounds. He used his body as a human shield to protect his men. He refused to be carried off until everyone else was. And he returned home as obviously a hero. President Bush acknowledged Tommy in the State of the Union address, and the entire time Tommy was struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. His family life fell apart. His wife left with the children. After a night of heavy drinking and pills, he drove his truck into a tree and survived.
Melissa Fitzgerald remembers Tommy's story well. She says, if it had not been for the NADCP, life would have been different for him.
And this was right before I started. Justice Rivette had been advocating with the governor and in North Carolina to open a veterans treatment court. And during this time, a veterans treatment court opened in North Carolina, the first one in Harnett County, which was several hours from where Tommy lived. And, you know, in that program, Tommy received, I mean, the accountability, the treatment, the structure, a mentor, and he was able to get his life back.
Melissa Fitzgerald left her life in Hollywood behind to come work for Justice for Vets. For years, she played the character of Carol Fitzpatrick on the hit TV show The West Wing. But Melissa has always helped people in need. Melissa is co-founder of the nonprofit group Voices in Harmony. The organization uses the theater arts to mentor at-risk teens.
I started Voices in Harmony in 1995 with several other actors, and we kept working on that program as volunteers while we were still having our acting careers, and we were struggling like crazy as actors, but Voices in Harmony was flourishing. And we just kept getting inspired to do more and more. And, you know, then I got The West Wing and continued to do Voices in Harmony through that entire time.
In 2007, Melissa traveled to Africa with several others to be of service.
During The West Wing, you have a good chunk of time off in the summer. So I, one summer, went to South Africa and volunteered, and as a result, I had the opportunity to go somewhere else too through International Medical Corps, and I chose to go to Northern Uganda because I'd been working with teens, and there was the child soldier issue where children were being abducted by the Lord's Resistance Army there. And I think that experience really opened my eyes to the effects of war on communities. I get emotional thinking about it, but that really inspired me to feel like we actually have the ability to make change, all of us do, if we work together.
Melissa also helped produce the documentary film Halfway Home. The film features U.S. veterans from wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam. The soldiers recount their experiences in war and in their transitions to civilian life. There are approximately 23.2 million military veterans in the United States. They are the ones who have fought, sacrificed, and served this country. Now, Melissa Fitzgerald says, we all owe them everything.
I think our country owes our military veterans to embrace them when they come home, be there for them with programs that work for them and for their families. When you want to know who your character is when you're reading a new script or a new play, what do? Do you look at what they say? Well, that's one way. Do you look at what other people say about them? That's another way, and maybe even a better way than what they say. But the real way you know who your character is what do they do? So I think that's very true about life. And I think that if we say and use the words that we honor our veterans, thank you for your service, and we are a grateful nation, those must be backed up by actions, real actions. And I think real actions are supporting programs that work. And that's why I feel like Justice for Vets and the work that we are doing in veterans treatment courts is important, powerful, necessary, and essential to really expressing our true gratitude, because I do feel like the American people are grateful for the service of our veterans.
I'm Marcia James.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.